If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. In 2021, the Beaverton City Library's community-wide reading program, One Book, One Beaverton, explored themes from the book Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. This program, from January 2021, explores the death penalty in Oregon. Eliza Kaplan, professor of law at Lewis and Clark Law School and director of the Criminal Justice Reform Clinic, shares her expertise about the history of the death penalty in Oregon, recent changes, and the current status of the law. Moderator is Jenny Chamberlain.
I thought what I would do is go through some of the basics about Oregon's death penalty and the death penalty in general. And so bear with me, I'm going to share my screen here. So Oregon's death penalty is actually a very, very interesting issue, especially in the last 10 years or so, but also historically. Before I get into any details of that, I want to give you a little bit of the national landscape on the death penalty. So here's some information, and this includes Oregon in here, but 28 states and the federal government have the death penalty, including Oregon. There are 22 states that do not have the death penalty, and I won't read them all off. 12 states have the death penalty, but they have not executed anyone in the last 10 years, and that includes Oregon. 172 people have been exonerated from death row. They were wrongfully convicted, wrongly imprisoned, and they spent time on death row. That's including 5 people just this past year. And I always want to say about innocence, most of you read Just Mercy, so you know this, but as someone who was an innocence lawyer for many years, there are tons of innocent people on death row, off death row, all over the place that just, we can't prove it, which is why they're not exonerated, but they're still there. So 172 is quite a large number of people that we could prove. The number of executions peaked at 98 people in 1999. That's the entire country. Dropped to 35 by 2014, and there were only 17 executions in 2020. And interestingly, you've probably seen some of this on the news lately, there have been 10 federal executions in 2020. It's the first time in US history, right, that the federal government has executed more people than all of the 50 states. And it's the highest number of federal executions since Grover Cleveland was the president. So it's been a really, really big year at the federal level for executing, 10 executions, and then 7 was the total number from the states. Prior to 2020, there were no federal executions in the United States since 2003, and only 3 since we reinstated the federal death penalty in 1988. Lisa Montgomery was executed this week. She's the first woman to be executed in 67 years. And there are 2 more executions scheduled before January 20th when we change administrations. So sort of added some of that stuff because there's so much going on at the federal level. So when I talk about the death penalty, whether it's with my students, groups of people, the 3 areas continuously come up, right? What are the practical pros and cons? What are the legal pros and cons, legal issues? And what is the moral, you know, issues involved that affect us? And, you know, as someone who has studied the death penalty and represented people that have been on death row, as recently as last year, my law clinic had a parole case of somebody who was previously on death row. And what you see is all 3 of these considerations are constantly at play with our death penalty, whether it's in whether we should have one or not, whether it's how, if we are going to have one, what does it look like, whether it's in how we actually conduct executions, if we do have them, how often, what are the mechanisms of doing it. The legal issues are endless and have been since we've had a death penalty. And the practical issues of, you know, what does it look like to execute someone and how much money does it cost? And all of those things are constantly at play. The moral issues, obviously, people's religions come into play. The innocence issues come into play. There's a lot. There's so much in the death penalty, and there's so much for everyone with all different varying opinions on different things. So these are all the things that sort of come up. And here in Oregon, back in 2011, it's sort of the beginning of major change in our sort of modern history of the death penalty. And that's when Governor Kitzhaber said, this is a quote from a speech that he gave, "In practice, Oregon has an expensive and unworkable death penalty system that fails to meet basic standards of justice. 27 years after voters reinstated the death penalty, it's clear that the system is broken." So in even that statement, you have all of those considerations. And this is what leaders, you know, deal with when considering their role in the death penalty. This is what voters consider. And Oregon has had one of the most sort of interesting, I'll use that word, flip-floppy history of the death penalty. And as you can see, I won't go into what was happening during all these times, but as you can see, going all the way back to the mid-1800s, we've just keep going back and forth. We also have the death penalty in our state constitution, which not all states have, which means that the only way to officially get rid of it, if that's something that we want to do, is to vote it out through a referendum, a ballot measure, or if a court finds it unconstitutional. Those are the only ways. So what you see in our history is the back and forth, the voting for it, getting voting to get rid of it. You see some, the United States Supreme Court and then the Oregon courts have found it unconstitutional as written, but then it gets reinstated and we've gone back and forth. And during all of this time, you can see it's almost, the way I try to describe it is like we want to have it, but we don't really want to use it that much, right? And so as you can see, even prior to the moratorium that Governor Kitzhaber declared in 2011, which still stands today under Governor Brown, she extended it in 2015, we have only executed two people in the last 50 years. In 96 and 97, we have only executed two people, and both of those people, they gave up their appeals, which means we call them volunteers. And they basically said, I'm not going to appeal my case, and so just execute me. So basically, it's really unclear whether we would have executed anyone if they were still going through the very long process of, you know, being sentenced to death and then actually being executed. It's years and years and years. So that's the history. So as you can see, in the last 10 years, things have changed, or at least since we reinstated it in the 80s. You know, things have changed that we are now, although we are still a death penalty state, we're in that group of 12, and there's 12 that have it but don't use it. And there's 22 states that have gotten rid of it, and many in the last 10 years. So what's changed? How have we gotten here? And, you know, these are the things that I sort of think about when I think about, I go back into the 90s, when I sort of started my career as a lawyer. And I remember clearly, I'm from the East Coast, and I remember clearly we had a governor in New York running on the death penalty. That was, you know, in the mid-90s, it was all the politicians, the Democrats also, were all, both sides, very, very pro-death penalty, very pro-punitive measures and sentencing and mandatory minimums and all of that, right, the 80s and 90s. And so since then, what's really happened that has changed our minds on a lot of issues or opened our minds to on a lot of these issues? And with regard to the death penalty, I have to say that I think the wrongful convictions issue and that 174 people and the awareness that we get it wrong at least that often especially there's been a few states where they've had numerous wrongful convictions from folks who are on death row. So I think the whole awareness that we wrongfully convict people, you know, not just people that we put on death row, but the thousands of people that we've now proven that were innocent, is always going to change people's minds, open people's minds, maybe their hearts, to the fact that we get it wrong that often, and those are just the ones that we can prove. Should we really be making decisions on executing people? So the wrongful convictions issue, I think, was sort of the beginning of people questioning a lot of our criminal justice policy, including the death penalty. I think the cost has become a really, really big issue, and I'm gonna talk a little bit about the cost in Oregon, because I did a very, very big study on it a few years back. But that's a huge practical consideration, that states are spending a ton of money on having a death row, on all of the numerous appeals, and the way that the US Supreme Court requires us to provide different levels of protection for people. There's so many different costs involved with maintaining a death penalty. And many states started looking at that cost and saying, is this money that we really want to spend? The history of the death penalty comes, as I showed you, just in Oregon, but it's pretty fraught all over the place. And there's a lot of flip-flopping, there's a lot of changes in the law. And I think that is another issue. As people learn about it, they get like a little uncomfortable, maybe. The racial justice component, there's numerous studies showing that both who we sentence to death and who we execute, it's disproportionate to Black people and people of color. We've had in the last 10 years, especially the last 5 years, a brand new wave of prosecutors that are not pro-death penalty, that are saying, I don't really want that tool in my toolbox. I don't need it. It's not worth it, for all these other reasons, right? And finally, you know, there's over the last 10 years in particular, I like to say the pendulum swinging from the 80s and 90s, and we've swung to a place where, because of all these things on the death penalty, because of all these things on all of criminal justice policy and punitive measures, there's a real rethinking of mass incarceration. There's a real re-examination of, should we still be doing what we were pushing for and all these laws that we passed in the 80s and 90s, including all the death penalty measures, is that really where we want to be today? Did that keep us safer, right? Are those the right policies? So right now, we're in a real moment of questioning a lot of those things. So all of these areas, these issues, I think, have led to a lot more public awareness and a lot of rethinking of, you know, the death penalty. And if we're going to have it, what does it look like? Should we even have it? And that has certainly been true in Oregon. So here in Oregon, this is our statute, our aggravated murder statute. Until 2019, people that were convicted of aggravated murder were eligible to receive the death penalty or life without parole or another type of life sentence. And in every single aggravated murder case, a person would basically have two trials. They would have one to determine guilt or innocence, and then they would have or acquittal, and if they were found guilty, they would have another one to determine their sentence. So right there, just putting cost in your brains, we don't need two full trials when we don't have the death penalty, right? And then there's about 10 layers of appeals after that. The Oregon statute up until 2019 allowed for the death penalty when up to 19 aggravating factors were present. These are just some of them, based on, you know, how the murder took place, who was the victim. Just there were 19, and over the years we just kept adding on to them. So it really put almost every murder pretty much ended up in the aggravated murder realm and was eligible for the death penalty. And then all of these protections kicked in, right? So there's been a lot of talk over the years, should we have this, shouldn't we have it, what should we do? It's in our Constitution, right? And so one of the things I did, because as I mentioned before, is I did a cost study. And this has been happening in a lot of states. And I guess the way I always think about it is, you know, your moral belief in something or what you think is right and wrong is not gonna convince people who have a different moral belief, right? But why don't we look at some of these practical considerations? Wrongful convictions is always one of them on the death penalty, but also cost. And when I was working on this, we were in an economic crisis. We didn't have funds for all sorts of things, including many things in the criminal justice system. So it was really an interesting time to look at how much money we were spending to keep about 35 people on our death row. And another thing before I go into the cost is, over Oregon's history of having the death penalty since 1984, we'll call that sort of the modern time, we had a reversal rate of people's sentences and or their conviction of close to 60%. So people would get convicted, they'd get sentenced to death, then they would start their appeals to the higher levels of court, and 60% of the death sentences and or the actual conviction for aggravated murder were getting knocked down by the higher courts for various reasons, for problems that happened at the trial, in both of the trials, with the lawyering, with the way a court interpreted parts of the statute. So we weren't just having the cost of a case going through the 10 layers. We were having the cost, we have to deal with what happens when you go up to 3 layers of appeals and then you get knocked down and have to start over again. And then you go, another case makes it to 8 and then gets knocked down again. This was continuously happening because of how the statute was written, because how it was being interpreted, because of the lawyers working on both sides of the cases. There were so many things wrong with how we were applying the death penalty that the courts at every level above the trial level were knocking it back down. So I, with a bunch of my students, over 2.5 years, it took so much longer than we thought it would, went deep diving into the data of how much it costs, right? Our goal was to estimate costs associated with these aggravated murder cases that resulted in death sentences versus the costs in all the other aggravated murder cases, right? We did that. We reviewed hundreds of aggravated murder and murder cases just to have sort of apples and oranges also from 2000 to 2013. We also looked at appeals of aggravated murder cases from 1984 when we first put it in place until 2000 that resulted in death sentences. And just to give you some of what we found that, you know, the average cost per sentence, and this is excluding the Department of Corrections costs for housing and stuff, is, you know, look at this big difference. This is death, life, less than death, less than 5, pending as other. That's because those are all being questioned at the time of the study. You can see it in some other ways. You can see the change in cost of the death penalty by decade. 80s, 90s, 2000s, right? So basically, you see that our results, you know, showed us that the cost for aggravated murder cases that resulted in death sentences ranged on average from $800,000 to $1 million more per case when compared to a similar non-death aggravated murder case. I always like to show all this stuff because I think as taxpayers, we don't really think about how much we're participating, whether you agree morally or not, but we're all paying to have a death penalty where people are being reversed 60% of the time and costing us a ton of money. So I like to think that the cost played a big role in us changing our laws significantly in 2019 in a bill called Senate Bill 1013. And basically, our state legislature decided that we're not going to totally get rid of the death penalty. We can't by statute. As I mentioned before, it can only go away completely if we vote, as the public votes on that, or if our courts or the US Supreme Court find it unconstitutional. But a law was able to pass in 2019 that limits aggravated murder charges to defendants in just a few circumstances. So remember I mentioned before that our aggravated murder law, our prior one, had, there was 19 situations where if you committed the horrendous crime of murder with any of these aggravating factors, you're automatically eligible for the death penalty. Well, this new law basically narrowed the factors, changed the law in a few other ways, but the biggest thing it did was narrow it down to murder cases that are very specific, right? To defendants who have killed two or more people in a terrorist act, children under the age of 14, correctional officers or other inmates while incarcerated, already for a murder conviction, or police officers. And this narrowing will make it so very few people, only people that fall into this category, right? So up to five, you know, is sort of what we averaged, could be eligible versus the 30 to 50 that we were producing pretty much yearly. Whether they ended up on death penalty or not, it was a different thing, but that's how we would start these cases. So we've really limited it, right? So because of the law, there was a handful of folks that were still on appeals because of all those reversals. So seven people automatically became non-death cases. We now have 28 people currently under death sentences. And this last May, the Oregon Department of Corrections actually got rid of what we call death row, which was a special area in the Oregon State Penitentiary that just housed death row, and moved people into the general population. And that's a ton of money savings as well. So these are all the changes and kind of where we are now with Oregon's death penalty, a really, really different place. We still have a moratorium, but those 28 people are still in their appeals, and there's probably not any that will get to an execution date anytime soon. Plus, at least for the next 2 years, while Governor Brown is the governor, we have a moratorium. Another governor could come in and could change that, and then people will start being eligible and have execution dates. But for right now, we're sort of on hold with everything. And that's where we stand.
Thanks so much, Eliza. There were a few questions that came in. Do you expect the federal death penalty to be overturned with the new administration? And has the federal death penalty flopped like Oregon has at all? Flip-flop back and forth.
Yeah, good question. We've had a federal death penalty in place pretty straightforwardly, but also haven't executed anyone in a long time. So in that way, it's similar. There has already been legislation introduced to get rid of the federal death penalty. My opinion is that if that can pass in both houses, that President-elect Biden would probably sign it. I do know that under a new administration, even if a law like that doesn't pass, we would likely go back to where we were before, which is have a death penalty, federal death penalty, but not ever use it, or use it only very, very rarely. And, you know, one of the things that was so horrible about the last year or so with these cases is lower court judges in many instances wanted to sort of slow down the cases. So for example, in Lisa Montgomery's case, federal court in Indiana, and this included Trump appointees and Obama appointees, whatever, all the different judges really felt that she should have had more opportunity to have, you know, all the checks on her mental stability. She had a lot of trauma and suffered a lot with her mental health. And she was ordered the day before her execution, a federal court ordered to have her go through more examination of her mental state. And it went right up to the Supreme Court and they said no. you know, the cases not only were got to the death penalty, but they were handled incredibly harshly by Trump's U.S. Attorney's Office also. And at a minimum, that will not happen. But I do think that there is a lot of hope that Congress could pass a law that could get rid of the federal death penalty. So I guess we'll see soon enough.
Do we know the racial makeup of the people executed? Is there a racial disparity?
In general, in Oregon, yes. The answer is yes. The racial disparities, though, it's really interesting, both in Oregon and in most places, isn't just about who gets executed. It's often about who gets even eligible for the death penalty, right? So a lot of studies show that it's not just who ends up getting executed, but for example, when it's a Black defendant and a white victim, right, versus a Black defendant and a Black victim, in the first situation, that person's gonna easily be eligible. So the racial issues and the disparities come in at sort of every place in the process of the death penalty in most states, or ones that I've, most of the ones I've looked at. And there's also a real disproportionality among counties, both here in Oregon, historically, and in most states. Some statistics are really interesting when you look at a couple states that the majority of death cases come from two counties, right? In the whole country, actually, but then within a state, it's one specific area. And so you can see how much power a prosecutor has in those instances because they're making the call of the charging. So that then becomes, there's all sorts of racial disparity in those decisions right from the beginning of a case.
Okay, the next question is, are the costs of the death penalty cases essentially court costs over all the years of the original trial and the many appeals?
Yes. So, you know, the first big costs come, the U.S. Supreme Court has set some parameters about the kinds of appeals. Over years, they've set these sort of parameters of what is required in death penalty cases. Death is different, right, is the language from the Supreme Court. And states then go back, they have their laws, and then they put in place these sort of mechanisms. And then over the years, litigation, state litigation, federal litigation has led to sort of creating what has to happen, what's the minimum requirements. And so in Oregon, for example, as I mentioned, you know, as soon as you become death penalty eligible, you automatically move to having these two, it's a little different now under our new law, but historically since the 80s, you moved into having these two trials, right? One for guilt, one for your sentence. And you're provided a team of lawyers and investigators and to do all of these things, mitigators. So automatically that kicks in. They start preparing your case. The prosecutor may have put death on the table to get you to plea down because 97% of our cases plea down, right? But right there, those costs, even if you end up taking a plea and never going to trial, all those death costs kick in right there at the beginning. Then if you don't plea and you move forward and you go through the process and you get convicted and sentenced to death, you then have these 10 layers of different types of potential appeals to bring.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. This event was recorded by the Beaverton City Library. A special thank you to Jenny Chamberlain and Anne Lavelli of the Beaverton City Library.
My love is real. KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
If you're a lover of all kinds of music and how it makes you feel, please tune into Passing Sound every fourth Sunday at 8 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM or KBOO.FM, where we analyze elements in music to create an eclectic playlist for the listener to enjoy.